Welcome to the Business with Beers podcast. And this is the place where we help entrepreneurs expand their business, build their wealth, and generate passive income. I'm your host, Brian Beers, an entrepreneur who's on a mission to inspire growth from everyone around me. Remember that you need to take the actions others won't, and you can live the life that others don't. Please be sure to check out my weekly newsletter that now drops every Thursday. It includes one quote, one tweet, one podcast recommendation, plus some business and investing insight from me. It's short and it's sweet. My goal is to provide you with just a couple gold nuggets to help inspire your growth. Go to brianbeers.com to subscribe. Well, everyone, I am excited today to bring you Casey Brown. He is the founder of 3000 Capital, a real estate investment company that specializes in funds of funds, which I know we're going to talk about. He's also the host of the Cash Flow Pro podcast. Welcome to the show, Casey.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, to kick it off, I always like to hear kind of about your journey. So can you give me an idea of from 18 years old to kind of now, just kind of your path of, you know, kind of growing up, and then how'd you get to kind of where we're at today?
Awesome. Yeah, I'd be glad to share that. So actually, I'm going to start a little bit before 18, though. So I was born, but only for like 2 seconds. I was born in Kentucky. Okay. My parents moved to Pueblo, Colorado when I was two. So when I was two, I got completely transferred to a different state. Obviously, you don't remember that when you're that age. But I grew up in Colorado between Pueblo and Colorado Springs, which I say all of that because it brings me to where I'm at today with real estate. Colorado Springs had a very, it had a very strange market when I was growing up. It would go from like completely oversupplied to all of a sudden almost people walking the streets looking for housing. And it did that a couple of different times while I lived there. It was so weird because it was just really hard to get a handle on. And I noticed Colorado Springs is situated where it can almost grow infinitely in a way, because you have the mountains on the west, right? And then it could grow out into basically the desert as far east as okay. Really want to go, and it's still all kind of be considered Colorado Springs. So as Colorado Springs developed, and I saw that because there's a street that used to be as far east in Colorado Springs as you could go called Powers Boulevard, right? And then now Powers is like almost considered central Colorado Springs. And we're talking 20 years later. But the fact of the matter is it would just grow and grow and grow and grow and grow always. And so when I graduated high school, I was 18. Now we're going to start where you wanted me to start at. I moved back to Kentucky. My grandmother was still living here. She lived on a farm. We had the family farm. And so I really wanted that was where I started my journey. We always came back and visited, and I just decided that was really kind of the life that I wanted, was to come back. And I lived with her for a few years on the farm. I went to a college, Murray State University, which is about an hour away, so that I could commute back and forth and still take care of, I don't say take care of her. She didn't need care, but I could come back and make sure that things were going as they were supposed to. And so I got a degree in ag economics, ag business. And I started in on the commodity sales, and I was Series 3 licensed, which is commodities and options trading license. I also had a 6 and 63, which allowed me to do insurance and annuities and some other stuff. Anyway, I kind of like one day I was like, this sucks. So it was just because like I was out selling my rear end off for like, and I would end up with like a $40 commission. I was like, man, this is trash. You'd have to go out and you had to work on people and get them to agree to do margin calls if they got in positions they couldn't afford to be in. So it sucked. It was horrible. Yeah. So from there, and at the same time, I was working in the cattle business with my father, and which kind of is what brought all of that together. And so in 2007, I was like, I was driving down the road, I'll never forget it, and I saw a Caldwell banker sign in front of a friend of mine's house, a friend that I know of here that lived here in town. I saw a Caldwell banker sign in their yard, and I was like, so I looked online and they were asking like $200,000 for the house or something. Like, it wasn't a lot. And I got to thinking, I was like, man, 6% of $200,000 is 12 grand. I was like, that's $1,000 a month. If I had had my license, I would have got that listing, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously that was the naive me. I didn't realize you had to split it and so on and so forth. So anyway, so 2007, I'm driving down the road. I see a call with MicroSign on a friend of mine's yard. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to get my real estate license. Well, I had taken a couple of courses in college, which fast tracked my way to actually get the license. So like 60 or 90 days after this thought mm-hmm. down the road, I had my license sitting in, and now I've got a broker. I'm sitting at my desk. I'm ready to go. And somewhere in between there, you know, I had always heard that somewhere between then and now, or then and 2 years ago when I started this syndication and the fund-to-fund stuff, I had always heard that there was more millionaires and billionaires made in the real estate business than any other business, than any other business you could imagine. Or if they were in another business, they were heavily in the real estate business as well, right?
Yep.
And so I'm like, okay, now fast forward from 2007 to like 2015, 16, 17. So I go through a divorce. Life sucks. I go bankrupt. Everything was horrible. I was fighting to keep my kids here. And I thought, and now pre-2016, I mean, I was making, you know, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 a year, right? I mean, we're talking big money for a little community with 40,000 people and churning that kind of commissions.
As a real estate agent.
As a real estate agent. That was a lot, right?
Yeah.
The thing that kept nagging and like pulling on my shirt collar and saying, hey, is there's more millionaires and billionaires made in this business than the other business? And I was like, that's horse crap. There's no way. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm making good money, but I'm not making... Like, this is not millionaire, billionaire stuff. This is what it could potentially be millionaire, small millionaire, but this wasn't millionaire, billionaire activity, right? Because I wasn't able, and it dawned on me one day. And I'll tell you, the ultimate aha moment for anybody involved, for anybody that's ever been involved in real estate, is when you finally figure out scalability. And I couldn't, for the life of me, put my finger on. I was in such a transactional business, and you have to understand when I say transactional, I was going from one transaction to another. I was paying my bills. We were living life. Kids would get sick. I'd sell another house. We'd pay the doctor. It was transactional. There was nothing levelized about it whatsoever. It was lumpy.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And I didn't care. I don't care. I'm going to tell you, Brian, if you make $1 billion commission, right, you're going to spend that $1 billion commission, period. End of story. You're going to spend that $1 billion commission.
Yeah.
And if you take that commission and you figure out something to do to levelize it, which I had done some of as I bought my single family rentals and some commercial properties and some duplexes and quadplexes and stuff like that. But as I moved forward, I realized, and once I got to the point where I was like, okay, the Jobs Act had passed, right? We're all trying to kind of navigate these waters of capital raising and real estate deals and so on and so forth. And as the Jobs Act came through, and we're all trying to figure that out, and we started looking at this and saying, okay, hey, the millionaires and billionaires we've always heard about are the people that were one notch above who the Jobs Act now helps. And who I'm talking about is big, like mutual funds or not mutual funds, but like hedge funds, fund managers,
yep.
fund.
Yep.
Those people, that is who's making the money, Brian. That is who's making the money.
Yep.
Yep. Making the big money.
People who make other people money generally make a lot of money, right?
Correct. Because they're doing what I call from the old cattle business, corralling. They're corralling money up, right?
Yep.
And the money that they let through is not, there's nothing different in the money that they let through than going to, say, a fair and paying your $10 to get in, right? They're corralling these people up. People go through the fair, they pay $10 to get in, then they start spending money everywhere else because you let them in.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And the more people that you can corral up and let in, then the better off you're going to be. So, with that being said, I know that's a long kind of a beginning of my journey, but I feel like it's all relative to where we're at today, where we're headed, and why why this one notch under the hedge funds, the mutual fund guys, the fund people, the why that one notch below is such a crucial spot right now for those of us that want to bring everyday real estate deals and opportunities to our clients.
Got it. All right. So you're making all this money. Just how you start buying some single families, some smaller stuff, then kind of just as the next phase before you get to where we're at today. What do you do next? Is it you start, like, what's the real estate portfolio look like, or what's kind of the evolution there? What's it actually look like?
The one thing I need to throw in there is just a little personal vibe that I'm going to throw in right there in the middle is, so all of this shit is going great, right? Like, dude, I'm making money. We're selling real estate. I'm working, but God knows, man, I was working. Now, the other part of that, that's the other part of me saying millionaires, billionaires being made in this business. The other part of this is I was stretched, dude. I mean, I'm working like, I'm getting to the office at like 7 a.m. Some days I'm not getting home till, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, which again, the only reason I did that was because I had little kids. And so like my personal life is completely maxed. So, and that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, dude, there's no more hours in the day.
Yep.
I'm making all I can make. I'm scared.
So you got to deploy, right? You got to be more passive and investments.
The true reality was I could have hired 100 people to work for me, right? No problem. But the fact of the matter is when people called, they wanted to talk to me. They didn't want to talk to them. They wanted to talk to me. I was the product.
Yeah.
So the scalability of you being the product is that it's not scalable. You can't duplicate yourself. And what the advice that you're going to give to the people would want to know, hey, what do you think my house is worth? Right. They don't want to hear from somebody that works for me. They don't want to hear from my wife or anybody else. They want to hear from me. They want me to tell them because they know I know what I'm talking about. So with that means all that being said, I've kind of lost my train of thought, but I'm going to keep going here. With that being said, man, life got in the way really quick. In 2015, I went through a divorce. 2016, I went through a divorce, and life got really choppy for a little while. Because there again, now you take everything I had going on, working 12, 14 hours a day, which I'm not even going to act like I didn't lead somewhat to my divorce. We never fought Hanley. We never had,
You're just never there. You're too busy working.
I was just physically. And part of the reason I was never there is because the business had just grown so much that really almost by no fault of either of our own, we just kind of grew apart and life went on. Right. So I went through a divorce. It went through kind of an ugly divorce because we had all of these assets. We had a ton of assets that I had a lawyer on the other side, my ex-wife's attorney, who couldn't understand that we had these loans on these assets. She wanted to look at the gross value of everything, which was fine. Sure. Like, we'll take the loans too. We'll figure all this out. She just could not get through her head. That yes, we had these values and they were assessed that, this was the value. We had these properties and this was the value, but she couldn't get through her thick skull that they had notes. They had mortgages on. And so anyway, all that being said, she basically single-handedly led both me and my ex-wife to bankruptcy because she just couldn't let it. She wanted to fight over every single red cent. So 2016, go through all that, get all that behind us. Of course, now by the time I come out of the other side of that, man, this Jobs Act is really starting to get some momentum, right? Everybody's really starting to kind of figure this stuff out. Everybody's really starting to kind of put the timeline when I don't know it, when
the. Yes. So what do you mean by that? The Jobs Act, is this the ability to create these funds of funds? Like, let's get into some of that stuff.
That's where I'm going to get there.
Okay.
This is kind of when the real estate syndication alone is born. Okay. Syndication. Although I don't know when that term actually like was coined or made or things these things started referring to that. But what it basically made it where an unlicensed individual could raise capital for
private
equity. Right. We've always heard of private equity. And so the ins and outs of the Jobs Act is very ominous, and we could sit here and talk all day long about.
Okay, but it's created the 506C, 506D, all that stuff that allows them to raise. Yeah, we've talked about a lot on this podcast about that.
Crowdfunding.
Crowdfunding. Yep.
So yes, it basically, and it really kind of poured gas on the real estate market in general, because now all of a sudden guys like myself who had wealthy investors or people of prominence that had money, $50,000, $200,000 and wanted to invest, could now jump into a little deal and they could go down there and invest, Brian. They could go down there and invest in 123 Main Street. They owned a portion of it, an undivided portion of the LLC that owned it. And with that being said, now they could walk by and look at it, touch it, knock on it, feel it, see it. Sure. And they didn't have their money tied up in some soda company somewhere who could go bankrupt at any time, and they had no control. Now they've got some control, right? They're bringing some of their control back. And with that being said, now we're kind of leading up to the fund of funds, because the fund of funds was kind of born out of the syndication and this whole 506B, 506C. Now, I'm assuming, just for context, 506B is you can raise money. It has to be from people that you know. Again, I want to also time out. I want to preface all this. I'm not an attorney. I'm not here to advise or please get your own attorney, get your own advice based on anything I say here. But the 506B is people that you have, that you've known, you had a prior relationship with, and you say, you go to them and say, hey, I'm buying this apartment complex down here. Do you want in? You cannot advertise it anywhere. It has to be, they call it the friends and family for a reason, because it's basically you going to your friends and family and saying, hey, do you want to invest $50,000? You can get it out. They can get it out. They could use their IRA, make a self-directed IRA, whatever it is. If they want to invest with you, they can. 506C, you can advertise to God and everybody. You can advertise it there.
Maybe an Instagram public, you know, promoting it.
Yep. But the caveat is they have to be an accredited investor. And there's obviously, you can go to Google and type accredited, what is an accredited investor, whatever, and you'll get the list of
qualifications. Yep.
So because now the reason I bring those up is specifically because it's very important, because as you step into the fund of funds model, you have to know how those things match up. And I don't want to get in the weeds. I don't want to get so technical
or confused. It would keep it high level.
If you're doing a 506C, let me go back and explain what a fund of funds model is, right? So as these syndications start to get more and more efficient and the cap rates start to compress, right? There's less meat on the bone. Anytime there's less meat on the bone, people tend to look for ways to divvy up the services or figure out a way to reduce their cost in order to provide a better return for their investors and whatever. So the fund of funds model is born out of this. Now, I want to really tell you, this right here, Brian, is where a lot of your billionaires are made. Like, these are billionaire tactics, right? This is not something that I just came up with yesterday. Like this stuff has been going on, and I'm going to tell you, there is one guy that I can almost assure you all of your listeners has heard of that basically uses this same exact plan. Like this is his plan. It's Warren Buffett, right? You know, if you own shares of Berkshire Hathaway, you are basically invested in all the companies that he. Yep,
it's a holding company.
So tell me. So if I go buy, I don't even know what Berkshire Hathaway is today, a couple $100,000 a share.
200,000, whatever it is. Yep.
Just say it's 200,000 a share, right? So why would I buy a share of Berkshire Hathaway at 200,000 instead of just investing $10,000 in every company that one share of Berkshire Hathaway represents, right? Why wouldn't I just go to say, CSX and buy a share of them? Or why wouldn't I go to Coca-Cola and buy a share of them, or Geico, or any of these other holding companies, right? And here's the thing. Because you're investing in all of those, an undivided interest of all of those, right?
Yep. And they're private. I mean, they own companies that are private and you can't even invest in them.
Yeah, that too. Yep. Yeah, that too. So when I step back and I say, okay, let's look at this from a perspective of how can I effectively be this guy, right? So then I go back and I'm like, all right, I've got 100 accredited investors crowded up, right? And I've got you or the next guy or somebody calls and says, hey, we're looking for somebody to raise some capital. We've got a $20 million deal, right? And let's say that he gives, I'm going to give the most basic example so that you all can kind of follow.
Yeah, let's walk through one.
Follow. So a lot of times when somebody calls and says, for instance, I work for Elevation 8, Ryan Smith out of Orlando, his company is one that we raised for. And what happens is he has two classes of shares, right? He has a share class A, and he has a share class B, right? So what happens is, in share class A has, I'm just going to use an example. These are not real numbers. I'm just using an example so that we can make all of this work. So share class A has a 10% preferred return. Okay. Now, preferred return, for the listeners out there that may or may not know, preferred return is not guaranteed. The only guarantee about a preferred return is you get paid this percentage before the operator or
the sponsors. Yep.
Sponsors paid anything. So it moves you up in what we call the capital stack, right? Yep. And so there's a 10% preferred return for class A shares, right? With a 80-20 split on the backside. So after everybody gets paid, the preferred return gets paid, the profit that's left is an 80-20 split, 20% to the sponsors for the risk and all taken, 80% to the investors, right?
Yep.
Now, there's also class B share. Now, class A share has a $500,000 minimum, right? You must invest $500,000 at a minimum to meet this criteria, and then you get this 10%, you get this 80-20 split, life's good, right? Mm-hmm. Now, they also have a class B share. Class B share's minimum is $50,000, 7% preferred return, and it's a 70-30 back-end split. Okay. Right.
Yep. Now, I see what you're going.
What happens is I call Ryan up and I say, Ryan, I've got 40 investors that are all willing to do $50,000 a piece. Right. Ryan says, all right, cool. Let's do that. 40 investors, $50,000 a piece, $2 million. Right. So, or let's just do this. Let's say it's 10 investors. I've got 10 investors that are credited that want $50,000 a piece. All right, cool. So rather than you going straight to Ryan and investing that $50,000 with him and getting a 7% preferred return, 70-30 split. Yep,
consolidate to you and you buy it to A.
Come to me and I take you and 9 others like you and we all take the $50,000. Now, what does that do? It puts me and we take that $50,000 and we invest it in him. Now, I'm not going to act like for a minute that we're going to get a 10% preferred return, right? And we're going to get an 80-20 split. Now, I'm not going to pretend at all that we're not going to make anything. So this is just, again, an example. When the money starts coming back, like let's just say that there's a 0.5% that goes off for my services, right?
Okay.
I've got secretaries to pay. I've got phone bills to pay. We've got money invested in doing this. We are basically in the investor relations business, right? Because we're not on the operational side. We're in the investor relations business. Now, so we get a 0.5%. Just, and again, this is not, we don't take
this.
I'm just merely using this as an example. So we're getting a 10% preferred return. Casey's company, 3000 Capital, is keeping a 0.5% of the return, right? You are still getting a 9.5% preferred return.
Yep.
On your 50,000, instead of going directly to Ryan and getting the 7.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, because you're consolidating the money, bigger play. Yep.
You're getting a better split. And we on the split, like let's say we would offer our investors an 85-15, right? Or I'm sorry, a 75-25. Instead of you going directly to Ryan, then you get a 70-30, right? So you're getting more of the meat on the bone for less money. But you're letting us corral it up and let people through. And again, this is the way guys raise money. I mean,
how much have you raised or what do you have out there now?
We've got a $5 million fund right now that we're working on capping out. We're pretty good ways there.
You raise the money as a fund and then are you going and then finding other funds to then deploy it into?
All right. So this particular fund that I'm speaking of that we have open right now, because we started with individual syndications.
Yep.
Work towards this fund model. So this fund model is still relevant. It's still in its, I don't want to say it's in its infancy. It's a little bit past its infancy with us because we've been after it about 8 or 10 months now and trying to find the nuances, what people look for when they come to invest in a fund. And we've really tried to kind of, this is a test fund, I guess, if you will. I don't want to say that because I don't want people to think we're testing with their money. But what I'm getting at is
the structure of it.
This has been a structural.
Yeah, I got you.
A dissection for us where people still are making, you know, there's still money to be made there. But what they're doing is, so this particular fund that I set up has three operators I also have the power to, like, if somebody came and they had this just a killer deal and I could go back and I have the power within my private placement memorandum and my operating agreement to say, man, we're going to dish a little bit of our capital off into this deal because it's so good.
Okay. Right. Yeah, sure.
But the main part about this is I have three operators, right? There's three operators that are high level. Like, I'm talking about operators that have been in the business for years that have track records that are longer than.
Hence why they can do 500 grand minimums and don't need 25 grand minimums. Yep.
Correct. 100%. Now, these are operators that I've vetted. I've talked to all of them. We've been, you know, we're friends. We meet regularly. And so I've got one operator. I don't want to throw any names because I just don't, they're pretty big names, but I really don't want to, like, just act like I'm just named in there. People, if you'd like to know, come to us. We can help you. We can tell you who they are and show you exactly how all this works from your level. But we've got three funds that we invest in. One gets 50% of what we've got because they're just such a solid operator. And they get two asset classes. The asset classes involved are mobile home parks, self-storage, and multifamily.
Yep.
Those operators operates in two of those asset classes. The other two operators operate in one each. So we've got a pretty good division there of where we're going with this. Those one operator gets 50%. The other two operators get 25 each of what we bring in. Now, the other part of this that I want to emphasize is when you invest with us, we've got agreements in place with these operators that we'll kick it right over to them. And we automatically start getting that higher pref. We don't have to wait until we get the full $500,000 rate. To then go to them. We get 50 in, 50 automatically kicked into our bucket.
So this is more maybe a technical question, but like, are you your 3000 Capital, are you the investor in it, or is that individual the investor in it?
3000 Capital Fund 1 LLC
is the investor in the elevator, whoever's deal.
In their deals.
So they're That's giving right. you a K-1 and then you're giving your guys a K-1.
I'm passing it down the line, correct.
Got 100%. It, okay. Yep, cool.
And I'll tell you what this provides for. This is not a fund that's for, like, it's a fund that gives you as good a return as any of these one-off deals that you can find anywhere, right? But this is not a fund that if you want to, like, just be, know you're involved at 123 Main Street and go and look at it, touch it. It's not a good fit. This is not a good fit, but I will tell you what this fund allows for is diversity and diversification across. I'm going to name all the ways it's diversified, and you'll see this is just a web of diversification. So this is for somebody that wants a solid return with very, I'm going to say, less than medium to minimal risk based on what I'm getting ready to tell you. Okay. So the risk profile is really good. You're diversified in first, you're diversified across operators, right? Yep. So you're diversified across three operators. One operator goes off and decides he's going to whatever. None of my operators are going to go off with run off with a bag full of money, but I'm just saying you're diversified
across operators. Yep.
So if one decided to take the bag of money and run off, you've still got two others that are there, got it. Right? Your capital is protected in that manner. Number two, your capital is protected across asset classes. Like I said, mobile home parks, multifamily,
the three of them,
storage. So you've got a really like, so if like, let's say that multifamily, which is going to experience at least, I don't know when this is going to air, but at some point it's going to experience at least a little softening.
Sure. Yep. But mobile home parks might go up. Self storage might go up. Right.
Home parks are going to, should stay pretty steady because they're the Bitcoin of real estate.
That's a good thing, but yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess I mean the limited supply. Then you have self storage that's in there too. Self storage is just like, man, that stuff's like a billboard, man. It just keeps pumping money into the, as passive income. It's unbelievable. So anyway, so you're diversified across operators, you're diversified across asset classes. And the third diversification, which to me in a lot of our markets is the most important, is geographically diversified. Because the thing is that our mobile home park guy, he's got mobile home parks in Virginia. He's got mobile home parks in Florida. He's got mobile home parks in Utah, right? So you get a hurricane in Florida and you lose that income stream for, obviously they're insured, right? So, but they're an interim where they're not collecting. Anyway, anything can happen, right? You're diversified across geographic regions for that very reason. And then you've got self-storage in, like, say, like, the, for instance, self-storage in Washington, self-storage in Georgia, and self-storage in Pennsylvania, right? Yep. You're basically geographically diversified so that if the self-storage takes a dump and goes to nothing in Utah, you've still got Pennsylvania, Georgia to fall back on.
Yep. And I've got another one. I don't know if this applies to you, but you could have levels within it too, right? Like you might have a C class multifamily, you might have a B class multifamily, and an A class, and like, so it, yeah, further diversifies it up.
As we grow our fund of funds model with investors and people coming in and asking questions, like you just said, we're going to expand the ability to diversify. Now, I'll tell you, a lot of people, there is some legal limits to this stuff as far as we're concerned. Okay. Before we have to be licensed, there's a certain number of investors you can work with in each deal. There's some limits. And I'll tell you,
what's the most you can raise? I think it's five.
No, it's not. Yeah. You can do quite a bit more. I'd have to ask my attorney.
No worries.
Still stepping into the a lot of the legal framework stuff, I've kind of left to them, which he's been just spot on. He and his girls that help there both are, you know, we have to report investing based on blue sky laws and all that stuff, and they take care of all of that for us. And they filed our, you know, they filed all our stuff with the SEC because we still, you know, the SEC still oversees us even though we're not licensed. They've still got their eye. Sure.
Yep.
Making sure that we're not like taking buckets of money and just running off and living the high life, private planes and vacations and stuff.
There you go. So,
with all that being said, you know, there is, and I'll tell you another reason why I'm hesitant to mention or to speak to exactly like what these limits are is the main reason is because they're constantly changing. They've changed things like six or eight times because they were like, when they first started, like, they didn't realize, like, hey, there is actually people out there that are going to do this stuff. Like, and they're going to do it big. So we've got to start. Okay. All right. Hey, we've got to start focusing on, we've got to double this. We've got to triple this. We can cut that in half because not many people are doing that. You know, so the SEC has kind of been learning this as we've gone along as well. And they've really done a good job of making this stuff usable for us because they want people raising this. This is a vein of money that a lot of times, like, you think about it, man, you have 50,000 to invest. What are you going to invest in? Like, you're going to do, go buy two shares or go buy. It doesn't leave a lot of options for anything you're going to have a really noticeable return on.
Yep.
And so this has been a good place for people to take their IRAs. You know, if you've got an IRA and you're an accredited investor, you're our folks because you want something that's diversified. And you want something that's safe that you can put your self-directed IRA into and we can pump it out and get it where it needs to go with some of these high-level operators. And, man, when I say high-level operators, I really want to kind of make it – these are people like you can't just go to their website and book a call with, okay? It's just not – that's the type of operators we're working with. So we're – when we work with people like this – they have a group of people underneath them that really handle all of
information.
We've got direct access. Now, I'm going to tell you, find a real estate investment trust right now where you can pick up the phone. You can pick up the phone and have any direct connection to the CEO of that. There's not any. They're not there.
Yep.
Because then you call me and say, hey, man, I got a problem with this. I'm calling one of the main guys and I'm saying, hey, dude, listen, we've got some people raising issues about this. What are we going to do? Yeah, so we've got a direct connection to the top to get answers to the questions you need to get answers. You can find it. And once you come on and you learn who these operators are, you can go to their websites and watch the deals that they're bringing in. So know what your money's going into.
Yep. That's awesome. Yes. So where can listeners connect? Where can they learn more about, 3000 Capital, your podcast, where can they find you?
The main place I would like to send people is to my podcast, www.cashflow.pro. No.coms, no anything, just cashflow.pro. And you can learn infinite amounts of stuff from us. We are from our website there, and then it'll lead you to 3000capital.com. But really check out and subscribe and find us at cashflow.pro.
Awesome. Cool. I appreciate you coming on and learning all about this. I got a ton of notes here and, I think I learned a few things. I think our listeners did too. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, Daisy. That's all we got for this episode with the Business with Beers podcast. One thing that would really help both us and other new potential listeners is to rate the show and leave a comment in iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen. Also, make sure to link up with me on your preferred social media platforms, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find all my links at brianbeers.com. Please just share the podcast with anyone who you think might enjoy it. And until next time, remember to take the actions others won't to live the life that others don't.